Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee.
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. 1 week closer to that. Smell of the grass. I can't wait to get back out there. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We got Chris Sanders coming on, Run TMC. We got to talk about the abundance of receivers, the quantity that they have. I don't know about the quality, but they have quantity, that's for sure. So we'll get into that with Chris Sanders. We got Parker Kelly here producing, and we're going to talk some quarterbacks this segment, and we're going to have a lot to talk about this whole show.
Man, I can't wait. One of the exciting times of the year is the start of off-season practices, and I can't wait to get out there.
Yeah, no, it's always, I don't know, there's just something about being out there on the grass. It just brings back just a great feeling, and obviously not out there playing, but still just feeling the energy that the guys have when they come out. And yeah, it's just something that you cherish and really appreciate. So I can't wait for the opportunity to get back out there. But another guy that's looking for the opportunity to get out there, not get back out there, because he's getting out there for the first time, is Cam Ward. And we know Cam is going to be the talk of rookie minicamp. But I want to kind of rewind it back to the whole process and Mike Borgonzi. And some of the things that he said to me, in addition to, you know, the press conferences, as far as the plan is concerned. And let me ask you this. I have my rankings of level of importance. But what would you say are the three most important things for a quarterback to be successful?
I'd say the biggest thing is having a grasp of being able to get guys in and out of the huddle, knowing what everyone's doing, which I don't foresee that being a problem with Cam Ward, because he seems like a guy that's always going to be prepared. Not a lot's going to catch him off guard. I'm sure the coaches are going to try to throw different things at him just to see how he responds. But Cam Ward doesn't strike me as a guy that's going to be unprepared. So I'd say that's number one. Number two is, you know, he's going to hold himself to a certain standard. So he's going to expect that from other guys, which it falls into the leadership category. So I'd say that is probably second. And number three, this is more so for me personally, but I want to see him protect the football and not turn the ball over a lot during camp. So I'd say those are three big things I'm looking for.
So, but if I'm talking overall, because like I said, we're rewinding it back, not focusing on rookie minicamp, but just overall projecting his success. So for me, projecting that success, looking at, okay, what will make it much more suitable for this young man to be successful over the long haul? And so for me, the first thing for me, obviously the talent's there. He was the number one pick. But for first thing for me is stability. I think it is critical. And I wrote about this the week of the draft when we looked at Jake Locker, we looked at Vince Young, we looked at Marcus Mariota. Like, there was no stability for none of them. Vince Young, he falls more into another category I'm going to get into in a second. But if you look at the one quarterback that they selected in the top 10 in the last 20 years that was successful, has stability. He was able to come in and digest the offense and know it and just be able to play football. Stability is very important. And this isn't necessarily me laboring for Brian Callahan to keep his job as much as it's me saying, hey, if you want this quarterback to be good, you got to have patience with him and with his coach. And you got to have some level of consistency, some stability. So that's the number one thing for me. Now, from there, I go to situation. And those things are very tied together because obviously – the best situation for a guy is for him to be in the same offense over extended time and have that stability. But this goes back to what I said about Vince Young. Vince Young was stuck with a head coach that didn't like him. Vince Young was in a situation where his style of play didn't match the team's identity. And so that ended up just working against. And then obviously with Vince Young, because I'm not going to not put some of his failure on him, he was apparently not the most strong-minded person. And he had the issues that he had. And, you know, he took the pads off and threw them in the stand. We know the story. But a lot of that can be avoided by situation. Not everybody is what I think Cam Ward is going to be, and what he is able to elevate himself and still be okay if the situation isn't right. But situation is important. Now, it's funny the way these things are all interrelated, because the number three thing for me is talent around him, right? And obviously having a talented group of pass catchers is a good situation. So it's tied. Typically, stability is what allows you to get a good group of pass catchers and allow those pass catchers to do the best in that system over time. So you see how it's 1, 2, 3 all tied together. And those are the things that I think are most necessary for Cam Ward to be successful. Now, as we open, there's 13 receivers here. Quality, we'll see. Quantity is definitely there, but we'll see how the quality part of it. I think they could get a little, they'll need to get a little bit better. Maybe not this year, but next year, they need to bring in another impactful receiver.
Yeah, because we saw at Washington State, you know, Cam Ward was statistically pretty good during his time in Pullman, but he didn't have, like, a plethora of great receivers. He had Kyle Williams,
yeah.
But when he got to Miami, he had Xavier Restrepo, Elijah Arroyo, Sam Brown. The list goes on and on. And then we saw a side of Cam Ward. Yeah, saw a side of Cam Ward that we've never seen before. So there's plenty of, like you said, there's plenty of quantity here. But quality is the thing that we're still to be determined.
Yeah. So when you look at this situation that Cam Ward is in, and Mike Braganzi, he explained this. Let's go back to the process, right? I don't remember the exact date. I want to say 19th, Senior Bowl. You know, down there in Mobile, we were able to set up the meeting with Mike Braganzi, and I just asked him straight up, like, "Yo, what's your plan? Like, how do you go about building a roster? Are you someone who gets the quarterback and builds around him? Or he's someone that builds the roster and drops the quarterback in?" And he told me, you know, actually, I want to be a blend of both. And he said that the first thing that they have to do is fortify the trenches. Like, he's a big build from inside out guy. But he said the main thing with the quarterback, and this is where they were at that point, the main thing with the quarterback was to find out which one is he. Is he a guy that you got to find someone else, like a bridge, to bring him along? Or is he a guy that you're going to be able to play right away, withstand the growing pains, but develop him and him be okay over the long term? And he said, like, if it's a bridge guy, then we got to, you know, if we have to find a bridge guy, then we need to, you know, find the right guy, because he has to be one that's going to be willing to develop the guy who's going to replace him. That's a tough order to ask of somebody, but they had the ultimate guy in my man, Alex Smith. You know, and he you know, helped bring Mahomes, and they had to fight that desire, because you're seeing Mahomes do crazy things in practice. They had to fight that desire to say, hey, let's rush him out there, because they felt that Mahomes, not Cam Ward, Mahomes in this case, needed to be brought along a little bit further. Now, just because Mahomes needed to be brought along, just because Aaron Rodgers had to be brought along, just because Jordan Love had to be brought along, doesn't mean Cam Ward has to be brought along. These are all individual circumstances. And I think it's important that we understand that and acknowledge that. So when you look at how they went about this process, they determined early, look, Cam is probably going to be the guy if we don't trade out. We like him more than the other quarterbacks, and we feel he could play right away. So that's the plan. There's this talk that Borghanzi and Callahan and all that they don't have a plan. No, they have a plan. The plan has been in place quite some time, and you saw it play out. Because why? They signed Brandon Allen and Tim Boyle. That tells you they believe Cam Ward is going to be ready on day one.
Yep, none of which are a bridge quarterback. I went and trot him out there week one, so.
I think that's important to acknowledge, right? I wouldn't try to either one of those guys out there week one either. And this whole idea that, I mean, look, you could ruin a quarterback. Don't get me wrong. You could ruin a quarterback if you don't. But I also look at it this way. I don't know that you have the right guy if you put him out there and he gets ruined because the situation is bad. You have quarterback. Look at Joe Burrow. Right, you know, C.J. Stroud, these are guys that came in, even Bryce Young to a much lower extent.
Jaden Daniels?
Jaden Daniels is a different story, yeah. And we're going to get into him. We're going to get into him next. But when you look at, and I think C.J. Stroud, we need to talk about it. Actually, we could talk about those three, Jaden Daniels, Joe Burrow, and C.J. Stroud. But I think, you know, it's all about having the right guy. Situations aren't always going to be perfect, but guess what? If you are my franchise quarterback, you're going to thrive regardless, and I think that's what the Titans are banking on. Now, you mentioned those three guys. Let me ask you this. Jaden Daniels with Cliff Kingsbury, and man, kudos to him. Kudos to Brian Callahan with Joe Burrow. And kudos – I know he doesn't have the job anymore, but what's my man that got fired, the OC for the Texans?
Oh, Bobby Slowick.
Bobby Slowick with C.J. Stroud. What is the one thing, what would you say all three of them did with those guys to make it more comfortable for them in year one?
Get the ball out.
Get the ball out, right. But what makes you, as a quarterback, what makes you able to make the reads and get the ball out quick?
Easy progression.
Easy progression, right? But within that, what are you most comfortable with? What you've already done.
Yeah.
Right? What Joe Burrow did, what Callahan did with Burrow, he made Burrow's first year, and I'm not going to say just Callahan because obviously Zach Taylor. What Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan did with Burrow was make it like year two or year three, rather, at LSU.
Yeah, because in Washington, we saw them run a lot of RPOs with Jaden Daniels, which is what he did at LSU with Mike Denbrock.
Right.
So carrying that over to his rookie year.
And then you look at Bobby Slowick and his offense. If you notice C.J. Stroud at Ohio State, like he's throwing into huge windows, right? And it's schemed up for these guys to get open. Didn't hurt having, you know, Marvin Harrison and all the crew that he had, Chris Olave, like all those guys. It didn't hurt having them. But if you notice, the Texans had a lot of scheming up to get guys in huge windows. Not huge, well, NFL-wise, a huge window is, you know, from my arm's length to you. But nevertheless, it was schemed that way to make it familiar to him. That is what Brian Callahan, Nick Holtz, Bo Hardigree have to do with Cam Ward. Make this offense very similar. I know there are similar concepts. Cam Ward has said it, Callahan has said it, Borghanzi has said it. But they have to make it as similar as possible for Ward in year one. If they do that, he's going to be all right.
Yeah, I agree. And, Callahan with Joe Burrow in Cincinnati was interesting because, yeah, he schemed a lot of the similar things he did at LSU. Bobby Slowick with what worked for C.J. Stroud at Ohio State, he was really good about getting the ball out and allowing his receivers to catch it in stride. So I thought that was great for him in Houston. And then obviously last year with Jaden Daniels, Cliff Kingsbury basically mimicked everything that Jaden Daniels did at LSU, and it worked in year one.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see what kind of schemes Brian Callahan draws up for Cam Ward during his rookie season.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the key, just how comfortable he's going to make it for him. And, you know, look, man, like I said, I think Cam Ward, his makeup, I think if you look at his path, his journey, I think he's built to be able to withstand whatever adversity that should come this year. Now, I'll ask you this. Knowing the need for stability, knowing how critical that is for Cam Ward, at what point would you say Brian Callahan can't continue to be the coach?
That's tough, because I feel like if you're drafting Cam Ward, you have a first-year GM, a second-year head coach. I feel like by drafting Cam Ward, you are committing to Brian Callahan for a couple years at the minimum. And that's what I would advise, even if this year doesn't go as planned, which I still don't expect the Titans to be very good. But I feel like you have to commit to Callahan for at least 2 years just to see. Now, as far as you're saying if Callahan's on the hot seat after this year,
like, at what point would you say, like, yeah, we gotta tear this down and restart?
Titans get 4 wins, maybe 5. I think.
So they need to at the very minimum win 6 games.
I'd say, yeah, 6, 7.
Double what they want.
I'm not expecting even going a game over 500. I'm not expecting that. Maybe 7-10, 8-9.
Okay. I could respect that. Now, what if one of those losses is to the Patriots?
I'm not sure about that, because I don't know how much bearing that'll have. I know Miss Amy will not be happy about that.
Right.
But if the Titans lose to the Patriots have putting together a sneaky good roster. Yeah. So I wouldn't put so much bearing on that game. I know you have Mike Vrabel coming back to Nashville, but I wouldn't put so much bearing on that game alone.
Yeah, that's one that they're going to take personally. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, I think it's very critical that the stability, and as you said, you're marrying Brian Callahan to Cam Ward for at least 2 years. And it's a marriage that, you know, is it going to end up like one of the ones on Tubi in those movies, or is it going to end up like, you know, one of the ones that's a happily ever after type one that you see on Disney? I don't know. We'll see, but I'm looking forward to watching the whole process be carried out. And one person, obviously, that we know is going to be very important in that process, at least this year, maybe next year, is Calvin Ridley. And a quick note in regards to Calvin Ridley, he is having a camp at Lipscomb Academy. I'm pulling up the information here. It is May 24th, and I'm looking here to find the registration here. Let me hold on 1 second. It is, yeah, so he's hosting a youth camp at Lipscomb Academy on May 24th. It's going to be from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. It's for ages 6 to 16. It's a $50 charge, and you can register through True Edge Sports. You get a professional photo with Calvin Ridley and an exclusive camp T-shirt. No, he did not pay me to say that. I'm just putting it out there because I know it's tough to meet these players. It's tough to go and see them play. The costs are crazy. Here's $50. You could pay for your son to spend 4 hours with Ridley and you know, some of the coaches that will have their lips going. So definitely go check that out. Again, that is May 24th, 1 to 5 p.m. at True Edge Sports. Since we ended on the wide receiver note, we'll get into that with another wide receiver, and that's Chris Sanders. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break. Be back with Ryan.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Go, the lights dim, the music fades.
now. Starting at center for your Seattle Supersonics.
Oh, no.
Out of Arizona State. Number 53, Alton Lister.
And now, starting with the Ohio State Buckeyes, Greg Oden.
That's how you look like Jamal Mashburn, fresh out of Kentucky. Wow.
Shoot, you look like Calvin Booth from the Sonics. That's who I was going to say first.
Boy, Calvin Booth. Wow.
That's who I was going to say first, but I wanted to say that for next week because I told you I'm digging deep. And this year in 2025, I'm coming with some fire.
Okay, Andrew, Tony.
Tyrone Hill, you know how to steal yours.
That's you.
That's Tyrone. You, man. Seriously, man, when I walked out.
George Lynch looking for.
So what's going on with you, man? What's the word?
I'm ready to get back.
Man.
Get back into the facility, onto the field. Yeah. That's always a good feeling. Got the rookie mini camp coming up, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Ward is the focus. It's funny because Xavier Restrepo is an undrafted free agent, and he's the second most popular guy.
That's what I'm saying.
It's going to be there this weekend. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he just – what he did in Miami, I mean, he's a playmaker. I know everybody was having a big fuss. He ran 4.8. That's great and everything. But, man, this guy's a football player. And just – I went back and watched some more of his film. He understands how to get open. And I made a bet with somebody. I'm not going to say his name. He's like, he's not even going to make the team. I said, okay, watch. You know how he's going to make the team? It's because when Cam Ward gets in trouble, when Cam Ward feels like something doesn't feel right, he's going to go to somebody, Mr. Reliable. And who's that? That's Xavier Restrepo.
Does that man's name, last name, rhyme with the school that they went to in a different world?
Huh?
Hillman.
Hillman.
Stillman.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is.
Yeah, I figured that. You remember a different world they went to. Wasn't it Hillman University?
I don't know. I thought he went to McNeese State. I don't know where that Buster went.
No. In the movie, in the series, A Different World.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but listen, this cat can play, TD. And me and you talked about it. And it's listen, this. Can I really be honest? Because this really ticks me off. Is everybody thinks that if a guy runs a 4.3 or 4.2, that you classify him as a phenomenal wide receiver. That's not true. I mean, you know, there's a lot of fast wide receivers that didn't understand, you know, how to run routes, didn't understand how to set guys up, didn't understand how to burst off the cut. But then you got, you know, Xavier Restrepo that knows how to do those things. He may not beat you down the field and take the top off the defense, but when it's 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, he's going to consistently move those chains.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's going to be a fun process to watch play out. I'll definitely say that.
Yeah.
Restrepo is not on the roster right now, but looking at the roster, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 13, 11, 12, and wow, remember that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
That was on PBS.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Yeah. So, staying on task here, 13
sure.
receivers, including Restrepo. When you look at this,
yep.
I mean, where do you think the decisions are going to get tough?
I think it's going to be a decision on who can play special teams and who can play, like, you know, punt returner, kickoff returner. Here's a guy that we're not talking about that can really muddy up the waters a little bit is James Proche. We haven't been talking about him. I mean, this guy was at SMU. This guy played with my son CJ, and this guy can run some routes. He's not a speed guy. He's not a burner, but he understands how to get open. He can make the big catches across the middle. So you're looking at all these guys. You got Calvin Ridley. You got Van Jefferson. You got Tyler Lockett. You got Shamir DK. If I pronounce the name, I'm sorry.
Shamir DK.
Thank you so much. And Alec, I'm just going to call Alec from Stanford. You got Xavier Restrepo. You got Treylon Burks. You got James Proche. You got Bryce Oliver. You got Colton Dell. You got Jaquan Jackson, and then you got some other guys. But
yeah,
but
Tate
look at
Martin,
all the
– yeah.
Yeah, there's so many guys on this. Go ahead.
That's my question. Alec Iomanner is probably – I mean, the rookies, they'll make it. We'll see about Strabo.
Yeah.
But when you look at just who you think are the bubble guys as far as the veterans are concerned?
I think number one is Colton Dowell. Colton Dowell's number one. And then Jaquan Jackson, I think he's number two. And the reason why I say him, and I hate to say this, even though he has a skill set and even though he has some talent, you know, those fumbles are going to kill you. Yeah. And in this league, if you are making fumbles and you're making mistakes but have some ability, they're going to let you go. And you just hate to say that because now you brought in some other guys like a James Prochet that even though he may not have be a speed burn, but he's going to be resilient in catching the football. So, and then you have Colton Dow that, you know, even though he's a talent, when you're unavailable and you're consistently hurt, then that's just another thing. So it's going to be a lot of things that's going to, you know, transpire because you have a lot of guys on this roster. Then we're going to come to the situation when the season starts. Are you going to keep five or six? So it all depends on what these guys bring to the table.
So when I look at this, mm-hmm. and I was explaining this to Stillman last week, because he's like, hey, well, you know, Xavier Restrepo is going to be competing against Bryce Oliver. And I was like, not exactly.
No.
Of course, for a roster position, yes.
Right.
When you look at, like, that's like saying, Roger McCreary and Kevin Winston Jr. are going to be competing. They're both DBs, yes.
But right, yeah.
To do different things. So okay. let's look at this receiver core and kind of split it up into the groups,
sure.
right?
Sure.
So X receiver. For me, when I look at that, I think Alec Iomanner. I think
right.
Treylon Burks when he comes back.
Yep, absolutely.
I think Colton Dow.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the three X's or four
okay,
X's.
Yep. Yep.
How do you mm-hmm. view that?
I mean, I view it the same way. I mean, I may, and this is just my opinion, because when I coach an NBA, I make sure like X and a Z, they know both of those positions.
Absolutely, yeah, of course.
So they can intertwine, and it kind of like Calvin Ridley, he can do both. So we can count him in. I think Van Jefferson can also do that, also play, you know, on the outside. And I know that, you know, a lot, some of the times he's been used inside, but I think he can play a little outside also. And then, you know, you got who else we got?
Oliver.
You got Treylon Burks. Yeah, Oliver. You got Treylon Burks.
Right.
You know, it's just so many guys that can play the position. But here's what's going to separate all of them is, and I'm going to talk about a guy named Derek Mason. Derek Mason knew all of them.
Yeah.
He knew all of them. He knew the inside. Say if we go 11 personnel, you got an X, a Z, and an H. Derek knew all of them. He knew the X, he knew the H, and he knew the Z. So that's what's going to separate these guys because if you just have one guy, like just say, you know, just say the guy from Florida, DK. Just imagine if he just knows X. But then you have other guys that has the same skill level that he does, but they know all the positions. That's going to make them better because they can keep less guys as opposed to keeping six or seven.
Yeah, well, if you remember that long catch that Bryce Oliver had against I forget who it was against, but he wasn't even supposed
Texans?
To be in the game, the Texans. He wasn't even supposed to be
Texans,
in the game.
Yeah.
And he had worked a lot of X. He worked at Z, but
right.
he knew Z. And so, like, they were like, get in there. And he got in there, and it just so happened that Ridley had just ran a go route. And so he had to tap out, and Oliver went in. But the play call was already in, and Oliver went in, and he ran the play. He knew the Z position, and he made the catch. That's the importance.
Yeah.
Now,
absolutely.
When you talk about the versatility, Iomanner and DK, these guys, Brian Callahan spoke extensively about what he likes as far as their versatility is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, if you put Iomanner in the slot, you know, at 6'2", 206, you're asking him to do, you know, Xavier Restrepo, like work on and those types of things. So you have to keep that in mind. But then when you flip to the Z position, that's more or less Calvin Ridley's position.
Yes.
But then I would slide Oliver in there.
Absolutely.
You know, Tate Martin is interesting. I don't know where he's probably more of an X.
Right.
But
right.
I would slide Oliver in there. I think Prochet, Jefferson, those guys mix in at Z.
Yep.
But you seem to be higher on Prochet than me.
You know, because I got a chance to see him run routes. I got to see him chance because I watched him when he was at SMU with my son, and I watch how he runs routes. He's not as fast, but he's got a little shiftiness, the little suddenness get in and out of routes. But let me ask you this question, TD, because this is so important for the listeners. You know, when people hear X in a Z receiver, some people think, is it the same receiver? What makes a difference between an X and a Z?
So your X receiver is typically on the ball. Right, that's
there
your
you
guy.
Go.
You got to be able to beat press if you're an X receiver.
Yep. 100%.
You better be able. So that's your guy. He's typically on the ball. A lot of his routes and things, you're going to ask him to get down the field. Like he's your guy
you
that you want to do that. Your Z, you know, you'll send him in motion, He's off the ball. He's going to work the middle of the field. You'll have vertical routes for him, just like they have for Ridley. But if you ever notice, a lot of Ridley's vertical routes, like he runs them from the slot. You know,
he runs from
over,
the slot, yeah.
He does that. So you definitely like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I want. That's why you're the best, TD. I mean, because I want you to explain it to, and then you have the slot guys. Say you have a slot player, and those are the guys that are that get out of their routes suddenly. They can run the choice outs, they can run the seams, run the slants against linebackers and safeties. You want to have a quicker change of direction guy, and that's where Restrepo comes in.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't need to run a 4-2-1 to get open when you're creating space against a linebacker, against a safety, or whoever's in that core player. And this is where Restrepo's going to make his money, because I look at some of his routes, he finds those sweet spots. When I say those sweet spots, even check this out. Even though, say, if you got to run a dig and the dig is maybe 17 yards, but all of a sudden you see that opening, you find the opening for the window for your quarterback. You see what I'm saying? It's understanding, or you're running a seam. Say you're running a seam, and that safety doesn't come over, but you just kind of throttle a little bit in that seam. Those are the kind of things that I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's that feel for the game. And it's funny you mentioned that, because on Tuesday, I was working with the Glencliff football team and working with the receivers. And that's exactly what I was trying to get them to understand. Like, if it's man, you run all the way through. If it's zone, you got to settle in the window. And they seem to get it, and it's crazy that you mentioned that. But you're 100% right. And that feel, I think that's where Restrepo has the strength, has the advantage. Mason Kinsey is good at doing that. Both of these guys are really tough, too. That's the thing I like, the toughness that they bring. But my question is Tyler Lockett at the slot.
I think
the opening three receivers is going to be Ayo Manor at X, Ridley at Z, and Lockett at slot. And that's not to say that, you know, the other guys won't get time because it's a rotation. But what do you think of that?
I do. I mean, and you said the perfect name in the slot is Tyler Lockett. I mean, because you look at when he was with Seattle, and where did he score a lot of his touchdowns? Inside the slot. So you want to have a guy that's quicker, that can make your quarterback better, cram more, because you got a rookie coming in that's got to understand to throw into windows, to throw into a spot, to throw into the right place where he's supposed to throw it. And I just think with Tyler Lockett, he just brings so much experience to the slot position. Then you have Porche that can play the slot also, because just like what I said, he may not take the top off the defense. He may not be a speed burner, but he understands, you know, how to get open. Also, when you're in the slot, you got to make those tough catches. You have to, because you're going to get hit in the mouth. When you're running those shallow crosses and those shallow digs, you got to get hit in the snoot, and you got to be able to catch the ball in tight windows. So you got Porche, you got Tyler Lockett, and another guy that can maybe pay the slot is, I'm not sure because I got to watch him a little bit more, is maybe Bryce Oliver. Maybe. I'm just sure. Maybe. Those are to where some things he can take advantage of, to where I can know every position outside on the perimeter, but also the number two in the slot.
Yeah. No, those are great points. And that toughness, that ability to.
Can't teach that.
Hey, look, I'm going to get hit regardless. Let me catch it and get the glory with it. You know, glory and the pain.
Absolutely.
I think that's the approach. I did not even think about that. Like, they literally have 13 receivers.
Man. Dude, a lot. So how you going to get all these reps? But you know what you got to do? You got to show up on film. Yep. You have to.
You
have to.
Every rep.
Man, every rep.
I told the backup quarterback at Glencliff, young fella, his name is Omarion. I told him, because he got in and he didn't know what he was doing, they kicked him out. I pulled him aside and said, listen, man, every rep you get on the center has to be your Super Bowl.
Come on, man.
You have to approach it that
way. Wow, that's so good, man.
I said, even when you're not in the huddle, still listen in. Because what I kept doing, like the coach would give the play call, and I would say, hey, what was that call? And he was like, I don't know. I was like,
see?
And then I spit it out to him. And I said, listen, you need to know, because when you're up, guess who's going to have to call this play? You. You know what I mean? So it's just the approach that you have to have to this, especially to your point about getting minimal reps. Like, it has to be the Super Bowl every time you're on the field.
Yeah, and then also, too, we got to understand, and I know you understand this, is you're not – like, all these guys on the list, they're not competing against each other. They're competing for a spot. Right. That's what we got to understand. It's like, I don't like, so why would I not teach somebody else to get better to make him, you know, be successful in his route running? And this is what I did. This is what I did my rookie season is I knew there was a lot of receivers at the time, because before I got there, I was with the Oilers/Titans. They already had 100. They had already had a whole bunch of receivers because of the run and shoot. So they kept a lot of receivers on it. So I came in and I'm like, why the heck they draft me? But here's what I did. Is when some of the this is what I did. So when some of the veterans in 1-on-1 would go and get Gatorade in 1-on-1, I kept going over and over. Over and over. So now when they're like, oh, I did my one rep, and they go sit down, I say, you know what? I went up there. I said, Chris Dishman, come on, cover me. And kept being shown on my film. Then all of a sudden, everybody's eyes like, man, who is this dude? All of a sudden, I went from, and I'm not exaggerating, I went from like maybe fourth or fifth on the depth chart to number three to in the starting rotation, then eventually starting. Why? Because you got to find out those little things. Yeah, I'm going to get some Gatorade. Those veteran guys don't want to do anything. And I'm not saying it's the case, but I'm finding every little window. I'm finding every little door to go in. Because if you keep showing up on film, they're going to say, man, every time I see him, he's making plays. And can I share a little story? I'm talking a little longer, but I just want to share the story. I remember my rookie season. And Coach Steckel came up to me and he said, Chris, you know, they're thinking about putting you on a practice squad. You know, you're going to have to do something in this last preseason game. And we were scrimmaging or going against the Washington Commanders, when they were Redskins at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's late in the fourth quarter, and all the veteran guys are on the sidelines. And they just chill. Oh, I know I made the team. Here's the crazy part. It was 4th and 25, and I whispered to one of the coaches. I said, Coach, let's just go for it. I was like, let's just go for it. He said, what the heck? That's a preseason game. I ran a curl, caught the ball, spun, and ran for 40 yards. The whole sidelines went bananas. Who do you think was in the starting rotation in week one?
Yeah, that's right.
That's how you got to do it, man. Yeah.
Hey, listen, when opportunity.
And I'm not bragging on myself. Answer. I'm just giving.
No,
yeah,
it's just
yeah.
Speaking facts, man.
Yeah, and that's what it is. I was like, man, I got to keep showing up with fam. I there's a whole bunch of, and then them guys that were drinking Gatorade, when it came to cut day, they were gone.
Yep. It's all about who takes advantage of opportunities. So yeah. We'll see who does that this week.
Yeah, absolutely.
It starts this weekend and then, you know, rolls into next week, and it just keeps going and going and going. One thing they did do is create numbers at receiver. We'll see how the quality versus quantity weighs out.
Absolutely.
That's to be seen. But I'll say this just before. I'm not sure how much you watch the Chimere DK, but, man, if I'm Brian Callahan, I'm getting him in that slot, and I'm running that deep over at least two or three times a game.
Dude, he's flying over. Dude, that's what we talked about. He's flying.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what happens when they take that away?
Well, that's
what happens. What happens if you get pressed?
Working,
yeah, I know.
You know, so it's layered. It's layered, and that's the fun part of this game. The physical chess that you have here. So we're ranting. We're gonna go ahead and get off on that note. Definitely look forward to the next episode, the next edition of Blade. I know you're gonna be starring in that. So I'll holler at you.
It's Bud Dupree, and I'm talking to TD. All
right, back from the break. We got Bud Dupree. We got Young Guns, man. I'm feeling good about this start to this segment. We need to get into the defense a little bit, and obviously there's so much attention to Cam Ward, to Chimere DK, right, Elik, Iomanor, Xavier Restrepo. Like, we're paying a lot of attention, and rightfully so. The offense was despicable last year, and it has a lot to improvement to make. But the defense, I think, also has some – the pass rush specifically. You know, here's the thing. When I look at this roster, right, with Harold Landry being gone, they don't have a single pass rusher who has double-digit sacks. I want to say in a season. I want to say the highest total is 9, I want to say. It might even be 8. Arden Key, I think, has the most out of all of them. But regardless, it's under 10 sacks. And we know sacks are important, obviously impacting the quarterback too. But, you know, you got to be able to get to them. And that's something that this team really wanted to address in the draft. But to me, the Femi Oladejo pick, I just felt like you needed to get somebody that's a little bit more ready to go. And Mike Pregonsi, he spoke on it. The guy, Oladejo, what, week four, week five, he converted to outside from middle linebacker. And it's there's a lot that's expected in doing that. So I like the pick, but at the same time, I don't like it for this situation. Now, if you have a pass rusher or two who's already established, who's already, you know, a legit threat, then, yeah, go ahead and go with an upside guy. But at this point, I think they needed to try to get – not. I understand the logic. They traded back. But, you know, I wonder what a Donovan Ezeraku could have done here. I wonder, you know, Mike Green, he was available. Now, I know the stuff that – the background stuff. But I think you look at those types – they'll come in and have an immediate impact. Now, who knows? Oladejo may be able to, but the development side of things to me was something that a different team could do. It's not a luxury that this Titans group had.
Yeah, because the Titans over the past however many years have not been great developers of raw talent, and especially with a new GM, a second-year head coach who still is very much unproven, I get the skepticism. Now, I will say on draft night, Luther Burden was still on the board when the Titans were originally slated to pick at 35. Donovan Ezeraku was on the board. Nick Emmanuori from South Carolina. Were you a fan of the trade back and getting the third round pick?
I like what they did. I just, again, the way they went about this draft is not a team that's – I don't feel they're a team that's looking to win immediately. And that's fine. But if you're doing it, you got to have patience with the coach.
Yep.
You got to have patience. If you're giving him a bunch of upside guys, you know, Kevin Winston Jr. Like, moving back was good because you got a Kevin Winston Jr. who will probably start at safety next year.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I will put money that he's
going to
– not this year, but next year. He's going to start at safety. Right? So – you have him, a guy who's a playmaker, so I get that the trade back, in essence, got you that. But my question and what I'm trying to figure out is the development, the instant impact that I think a Ezeraku could have, that I think a Mike Green could have, losing that for Oladejo, like, was that worth Kevin Winston? And I think that's the main, like, thing you got to try to balance out.
Yeah, because Kevin Winston, if he wasn't injured last year, probably would have been a first-round safety. And then, no, I agree. This roster's nowhere close to be a ready-made winner. But this is a 2026 type of move by getting a guy like Femi Oladejo, who he made the switch to edge rusher or outside linebacker during his senior season,
yeah.
Converted from inside linebacker.
Yeah.
And then Kevin Winston, a guy who had – I believe it was the ACL during his senior year, but was still able to run and work out at his pro day, and it's probably going to be your starting safety in 2026. I agree. This is a total futuristic type move.
Yeah, and Mike Green was picked 59th. So even with the trade back, you still had an opportunity to get him. But, look, you're going to do what you do. Obviously, they're two different prospects, you know, but this pass rush, I'm just curious. Draymond Jones. So, actually, you know what? I'm going to find – I want to go to Mike McDonald. I talked to Mike McDonald about Draymond Jones at the league meetings. Let's hear what he had to say about Draymond Jones because this is pretty good.
Really talented player, man. People said he wasn't like a great scheme fit with us. I disagree with that. I mean, he's such a heavy player on the edge and also rush inside. When you get like five down stuff, he really excels too. So he give you like front flexibility, being able to pass rush both inside and out. So he's just kind of a great guy to move around. And let his skill set come like both early downs where you can play maybe a little heavier, a little lighter, or you can play C gap really well, and then pass downs kind of move around and play those things.
speaking of moving around, like, he played stand-up rusher for you guys at times, right?
He did. Yes.
Yeah. What is, I mean, to be that size and be able to be effective.
Well, yeah, speaks to his athleticism. Yeah. He lost some weight coming from Denver. My knowledge of things are heavier because he's playing on the other side. So just, you know, wherever he wants to take us, if he wants to go back moving side, you know, put weight back on, I think he probably could do that. See what those guys and the engineers want him to do. But yeah, whatever they decide, it's a good decision because he can do it. You know, yeah. So the answer is yes. The answer is yes.
In watching them, it seemed like he was able to get around the quarterback a lot, but didn't always finish the deal. Was there something that could have been done to improve his sack numbers as compared to his QB hits?
I think it's circumstances and situation.
Okay.
Some guys were able to finish plays. You finish two more pass rushes, now you get two more sacks.
Right.
That's that easy. You might miss those plays, but if it's all heck of a rush, you might have set up a teammate for a sack.
There you go.
The guy can rush the pass. He's a really good football player.
Okay, so as you heard him say, he spoke to the versatility that Draymond Jones brings. I think that's something that I want to see how that works, to where he could stand up and rush the passer. I get that opportunity to do that. Jeffrey Simmons had actually said himself where he likened Draymond Jones to a Danigo Autry. Now, he didn't say they're the same player, but the way that Autry was used, and if you remember, Autry stood up and rushed the passer, and it didn't look like – he didn't look like your typical guy standing up and going after the passer, but, woo, he was getting to him, right? So I want to see, can Denard Wilson's scheme, can it use Draymond Jones in a similar way?
Yeah. No, Danico Autry certainly did not look like a guy, a stand-up edge at all. I am interested to see how they use Draymond Jones, and, you know – you're going to have to rely on this interior a lot, too, with Tavondre Sweat,
yeah,
and Jeffrey Simmons once again. Again, they don't have to go sack the quarterback every play, but at least take up so much attention from your guards, your centers, maybe getting a little assistance from right or left tackle, that it opens up guys like Draymond Jones to go and get the quarterback.
You know what's going to be key to this also, this pass rush? It's the secondary. And look, you're not going to be able to – like, you're going to have to blitz. Like, when you have this group like this, you have to blitz. You have to run schemes and games up front. Sometimes those games take a little bit to develop, right? Other times, hey, it gets you instant pressure. But the point is, you need those guys, that back end of the defense. You need those guys to hold it down, to give that pass rush time to get there. And when you don't have that immediate impact, guy that is getting to the quarterback quickly, like a TJ Watt, you know, like a Myles Garrett. And I'm just using those as examples of guys who get to the quarterback quickly. When you don't have that pass rusher that gets that pressure, your secondary has to be able to hold it down to give them time to get home. So that's an important thing, right? Like, this is a team, you're not going to see them rushing four and dropping seven. Like, you're not going to see that too much. They're not the Eagles. Obviously, the Eagles are Super Bowl champions, but that's what allowed them to play the way that they did. They had the guys up front that will win consistently and get to the quarterback.
Right, because the secondary can only cover, you know, these star receivers in the NFL for so long. So that's why blitzing is going to be so important. So it forces the quarterback to get the ball out quicker, because right now with the pieces the Titans have in the secondary, you can't trust these guys to cover for 4 or 5 seconds.
Yeah, you need to. So it's just, you want to be aggressive. Denard Wilson's going to be aggressive. We know that. And I think when you look at, you know, L'Jarius Sneed, how he comes back from this injury is very important. Like, I thought they would draft a corner. I know they signed the young man out of Iowa. They did draft a corner, but he was more
Marcus
nickel
Harris.
And Marcus Harris, you know, out of Idaho. And then was he Cal, right?
Yeah.
So he's more of a nickel, but he's another upside guy. Like, they went upside on pretty much every pick almost, you know. And I get it. You do that. But you also want to get ready to go, guys. And I don't know that Oladejo is ready to go. He's probably going to be a solid pro, but I don't know that he matches what this team needed immediately. out of that second round pick.
Yeah, he's going to be thrown in the fire right away because, I mean, who else is there?
Yeah, it's going to be a rotation. You got him, you got Jalen Harrell, you got Arden Key. As we mentioned, Draymond Jones is going to stand up. He's going to be a part of it. Sebastian Joseph Day, when they go even fronts, you know, he'll be one of the DNs. I mean, they've used Simmons as a DN in times, too. So you got that. But, yeah, I mean, Khalil Duke, I'm just trying to off the top of my head.
DeAndre Coburn will be interior.
Yeah, Coburn's interior. And that's why I didn't mention T-Sweat.
What about TK McClendon?
We're talking on the outside. No, McClendon's gone. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
They didn't bring him back. Yeah. So, you know, in essence, Joseph Day kind of slid into that role. We'll see. But I know if I'm a offensive coordinator, it's third down. Like, I'm not overly concerned. I'm not like, hey, we got to stop 95. Oh, shoot. 99 is, we got to make sure that we account for him. So we'll see what happens. I'm glad we got to get into this on the defense, and we're going to end it on that note. Definitely going to have things for you guys coming out of rookie minicamp. This one day we'll have there, so definitely stay on the lookout for that. We appreciate each of you for tuning in, so we're going to go ahead and check out here. Check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking With TD, subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.